And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Martin Willis, your host. And we have Alejandro Rojas coming up in just a minute. Our guest tonight is Ron James. He's going to be talking on some UFO-related, ET-related videos he's been involved in over the years. And thank you for your support, for all the supporters out there. And you can support the show for a dollar a month or more. And that information's right on our website. And that's podcastufo.com. And just a couple shout-outs real quickly for a couple of new $10 supporters. We have Greg. Thanks so much, Greg. And we have Dan that is supporting for $10 a month. Thanks, both of you guys. And we are, you know what? I decided to do, anyone who's a $10 supporter or more gets a free T-shirt. That's what I'm going to do from now on. If you want to become a $10 supporter, I will gladly send you a T-shirt, and maybe even if you live in somewhere, as long as you live on the planet, I will send you a T-shirt. If you live off planet, I have to think about it. But that's it for right now, and you can jump in the chat room at podcastufo.com and ask our guest upcoming some questions. For now, we have the news with the one, the only, Alejandro Rojas. What's going on there, bud?
Hey, that's me.
That's you.
Yeah. UFOs are what's going on, buddy.
That's good to hear. Is there some activity?
There is some. Yeah, because if there wasn't, then I would be like, I've got nothing to say.
Yeah,
and out of a job. Yeah. But luckily, there is something to say. So, yeah, the first story I want to talk about is kind of neat. It's this lady who's a hotel clerk at this resort at the first in Hawaii, in Volano Beach. Florida. I don't know why I said Hawaii. But she works at the Ocean Sands Beach Inn. Beautiful place. Oh, my gosh. The picture's here. It's blue. It's the beaches just look wonderful. I want to be there so bad. It's making me really want to kind of take off. But she gets UFO reports from her guests. So I guess she feels that there are a lot of UFOs being seen out there. And she spoke with the news, First Coast News, and they did this news segment on her. And we've got this video of it posted on the site. So it's kind of neat. She even provided them with some video that guests have provided her. And most of the guests don't want to really go on record as saying that they've seen UFOs. But she says often they see lots of light hovering overhead and people get frightened. She said in December, some people called and said they had seen some lights coming in. They said that one acted like it was distressed and was going up and down while one hovered and then darted off. So just really weird behavior. Some people have told her that they're probably Chinese lanterns, but she says that, you know, they don't really act like Chinese lanterns would because they seem to kind of be zipping and zooming and doing really weird stuff. So it's a neat video that was posted by First Coast News, and we've got a little story on that. Roger Marsh found this and posted it on our site, so people got to check it out.
I wonder if they could be Chinese lanterns in distress, you know?
It could be.
Yeah, you never know.
Because what happens when a Chinese and other Chinese lanterns coming to its aid, perhaps?
Absolutely. No, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if anyone has checked, like, Prosaic for most of the lights. Like, for instance, an airport within range, a lot of times, those, you know, those big bright lights look like they're hovering because they're, you know, they're
right,
so far away type of thing. And I know, like, for instance, on Long Island, there was people reporting, you know, UFOs, and ended up being, you know, lights from those big headlights the airplanes have when they're coming in for a landing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always possible. There's military bases out there. Even NASA's not too far away from there. So it's possible. And I know what you mean, because planes, that happens out here a lot because we've got such a busy airport and clear skies. And when planes, like, turn, you know, you'll see their headlights coming straight at you, and then they're in another direction. So it looks like this bright light just came on and faded off when it really didn't. Happens a lot. So she wonders about that, but she doesn't think so. She thinks something's checking out the area. In fact, her quote is, "There's something out there besides the shrimp boats."
Wow. Maybe checking out Florida real estate or something.
Yeah. I mean, why not? And the pictures, the area looks beautiful. I want to check out some Florida real estate. Did you live in Florida?
Never lived in Florida. I've been there many, many times. Stayed there, you know, for a month one time in the winter. And, you know, if I had my choice between Florida and California, it would be California first, except for the drought. But there are some places in Florida that are absolutely beautiful, like Sanibel Island and down along the West Coast, just absolutely gorgeous.
Mm.
All that area, Sarasota, Naples, you name it.
I've never been to Florida, but I'd love to check it out. I've been to the Caribbean, but and I love it out there. So, yeah, it looks beautiful.
It is. It is. So what else is happening?
Well, going even further away, a spat of UFO reports in the English town of Newbury. So this is kind of interesting. So what happened is there's a town near Newbury. It's just northwest of Newbury, called Hungerford. And a few days ago, there was a report of a UFO, and this lady posted this picture. Now, the picture really looks like a point of light out of focus. And I posted, you know, a video and a picture of Venus out of focus, and to show that often people will get pictures of Venus, you know, that look like this. But not to say that it isn't unusual, just that it does look like that. So we can't tell much from the video itself. But this got even more interesting. She says that she sees it often, and it often moves kind of strangely, and then it disappears. She says she's even told neighbors. One time she got her neighbors, and that's where this photo came from, and knocked on the door. And she's like, "Look at that. What the heck is that?" And they see this light up there. It's often reported as being flashing green and blue.
Hmm.
So the Newbury Weekly News posted this story, and they said they got a flurry of reports from people who said they've seen the same thing. So people in the area from Newbury and other areas have called in. And they're all saying, you know, it's weird. It's there so often. It flashes. It moves very strangely. It's eerie. And they've got, like, at least five reports that they've got here on their site of other people thinking that this is something odd. So it's really interesting. In fact, one person reported it as looking like a ball bearing hanging in the sky. He said it was metallic and silvery. And it went over them, and he was sure it was not a balloon, and he watched it in amazement.
Wow. That's quote unquote, I imagine.
Yeah, well, he said it was, essentially. Yeah. And then he said it vanished.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. And blue and green is not what you would see on an airplane, that's for sure.
You wouldn't see that on a airplane. However, I did make one point that, you know, the same reason you see a star twinkle, because you're looking through the atmosphere. If a star, especially if it is on the horizon where there's more atmosphere you're looking for, through, and even more so if you're like in Phoenix or L.A. or someplace where there is pollution, the lights will look different colors, and they'll look like they're changing different colors. So that would be something that could make a light change different colors. But, of course, some of these people said they felt it flew closer to them, and that it got these weird, strange movements. So really weird stuff.
Yeah. Now, there's another – I want to say Warminster. there's another area where they see sightings a lot as well in England. And they don't really have the clearest weather either.
Yeah, they don't. What's interesting, I don't know. I don't feel like when they claim that an area is a hot spot in England that they can really say that most of the time. You know, they don't have organizations that are doing like MUFON, or we've talked about these UFO maps with Newfork, where people are actually, you know, using some data to come to those conclusions. Often it's anecdotal, and Warminster does have sightings, and they've had a couple of really important sightings that, and I think that's why it's in people's minds. But it would be interesting. However, you know, especially if you look at the headlines that we post, because we post them every day, the UK seems to be writing about UFO stories at least on a daily basis. They are tabloidish. These two papers, The Mirror and The Daily Express, very tabloidish, and they can be silly, and sometimes their research isn't that good, and they're sensationalizing something that's not that exciting. But they write about UFOs on a daily basis, but also local papers like this Newbury one. They seem to be very, very open to the topic, and it seems to like there are quite a bit of sightings in England. In fact, reading all of these stories, certainly I would say there's more new stories about UFOs in England, and it could be that there are more UFO sightings per person in England. And if someone could verify that, that would be really interesting.
Yeah, it would be good to see a similar map, like you're saying. It's too bad they don't have like a MUFON type of, you know, centralized organization like that, especially.
Yeah,
you think that they would if they're actually seeing all these things.
They do have some organizations, but nothing that's kind of taken off like MUFON is all over the country.
Right. So we have one more story.
We got one more, and this is a really exciting story. I love NASA stories anyway, but this is kind of neat. And this is about the same time I wrote a longer story, very more sciencey, about Europa, because this is kind of cool. NASA says they're going to go to Europa, which is a moon of Jupiter that they think has a crust of ice with water below. So it's exciting. They're going to go there and start to explore it, and there's already these machines that can go under the ice, and it's just incredible to think about what might be under the ice. But
isn't the ice like a mile thick or something?
It is 12 to 19 miles thick.
Okay, that'd be one
However,
heck of a robot.
It would, but like I wrote in my story, there's a company, Stone Aerospace, that believes that they've developed a hydrobot, is what they're called, that drills through the ice, that can drill that far. It uses fiber optics to be controlled and to get its power and everything. And they've done some trials with it already. I think it's gone 31 meters. But, you know, it's hard to find mile-thick ice here on our planet. But they say no problem. They can do it. So it seems like the technology already exists to accomplish that.
Yeah.
So it might not be as far-fetched as we think.
Wow. How about that?
But so this is to support my idea that over in England, they love UFOs. You know, NASA's administrator, Charles Bolden, went to speak with the British school children, and they asked him about aliens in Area 51. And it's kind of cool. His answers were pretty neat. He essentially said in his talk that, you know, at NASA, they believe they're going to find extraterrestrial life somewhere. So one kid said, well, do you believe in aliens? And he said, I do believe that we will someday find other forms of life, or a form of life, if not in our solar system, then in some other solar system, the billions of other solar systems in the universe. So that was kind of cool. But then he started talking about Area 51. He says it does exist, but he doesn't think there are aliens there. In fact, he said he's been there. He called it a normal research and development place. He says, I never saw any aliens or alien spacecraft or anything when I was there. He says, I think because of the secrecy of the aeronautics research that goes on there, it's ripe for people to talk about aliens being there. So kind of cool. This guy had been to Area 51 and talked about it. So, any, you know, he admitted, and there's still some people who don't believe Area 51 exists. So just further support to Area 51 exists.
Wow.
Maybe there's no aliens there, but yeah. He says there's aliens somewhere, and gosh darn it, he thinks NASA's going to find them.
Well, either that or they'll find us, right?
Yeah, I think that's most likely the case. If, of course, like the field we're in, if, of course, they haven't already found us and they're sneaking around, being sneaky little buggers, frustrating the heck out of people like me and you or our listeners, not exposing themselves thoroughly, but just kind of being tricky,
yeah.
Tricky little critters.
Makes you really, when you really think about it, you know, it comes up on the show all the time, and your show too, is that it really is so elusive. And it's just, you know, the common comment you always hear from anyone on the skeptical side, which I think it's good to be on the skeptical side, but mm-hmm. is, you know, all so-called evidence is fleeting. You know, there's mm-hmm. And unpredictable, unrepeatable. So I think it's up to them. If they want us to know, they will let us know.
I am of the same exact opinion because, like you said, what we found thus far has been fleeting, and a lot of the best minds, the scientists who believe there's something going on, there's some sort of intelligence at play here, third party, that they're just two steps ahead of us, and we just can't catch them.
If they have the means to get here, then they have the means to do that too.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right there, friend. We'll be talking to you next week.
All right. Talk to you next week, buddy.
All right. So everyone, hang on for just a minute here, a quick little music break, and we'll be back with Ron James. Ron James, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us. And this is the first time we've ever spoke. Well, today. And so the listening audience out there would like to know, who is Ron James? So if you wouldn't mind going right in, explaining who you are, your interests, how you got interested in the topic, and we'll talk about filmmaking after that.
Awesome. Well, you know, back when I was coming up in the media business, I used to watch UFO shows and read the magazines. And I remember Nick Pope, when he was actually still Minister of Defense, used to write a column for UFO magazine. And I remember thinking, wow, that's pretty cool that some guy in government will actually talk to people about this stuff. And then I see Stanton Friedman on TV, and I think to myself, wow, this is so awesome. Here's this guy who's a scientist. And he was actually willing to really go on the record and really explore this subject. And so I thought that it was really great that it was getting the kind of exposure that it was getting. And later on, I started being exposed to a lot of different mysteries besides just the ET question. And I started realizing that they're all profoundly interconnected. And, you know, early on, I decided that when I got into media, this is the direction that I wanted to go. And so since then, I've been on a spiritual odyssey through Sedona, Arizona, where I produced over 200 DVDs covering everything from cryptozoology to ghosts and EVP, electronic voice phenomenon, all the way to several docs about UFOs, metaphysical practices, new science, quantum physics, and how, you know, science and the paranormal are kind of fusing together into some common understandings. It hasn't happened yet, but it's getting there. And, of course, the UFO stuff. So I've produced the X Conference 2 years in a row. I've done a ton of behind-the-scenes stuff producing these events and handling all the video production and the streaming. And then, of course, I did the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure, which my company produced. And then I am currently involved in the Congressional Hearing Initiative, working with Steve Bassett. We sent out the DVDs of the Citizen Hearing to every single member of Congress. We sat in my house together and made 6,500 DVDs on a burner and put them in boxes and shipped them to every member of Congress. And so now we're very actively pursuing people in Washington to try and bring about disclosure. So that's a background on, you know, what I've done and where I'm from. And then, of course, I've won the EBE Awards, are arguably the biggest award in the film fest in the ET film category. And in 2012, I won Best Picture and People's Choice for the Disclosure Dialogues. And then in 2015, we won the Best Film and People's Choice for the Travis Walton documentary, which I am continuing to take a lead role in.
Yeah. It seems like we're having just a little bit of an issue with your phone. Is everything all right with that, as far as you know?
Sure.
Okay.
It should be. Is it better now?
Seems a little better now, yes. And the name of your website is iVolveTV.com. iVolveTV.com.
Yes, and that's like an online subscription-based TV network where you can find all kinds of topics about the metaphysical stuff, the ET question, and, of course, all the related subjects.
Is it just your material alone?
No, we have material from other people. I've produced a lot of stuff, so a lot of the content on there is mine, but we're developing original shows right now, and, you know, everybody's invited to participate. So if there's content creators out there that would like to find a place to monetize their content, we can give them that option.
Now, I don't really want to open a can of worms here, but I might be by asking this question, but it seems to me that there are other people that did a disclosure, you know, the citizen hearing video. So is it two different parties that did these videos?
No, the citizen hearing was put on by Steve Bassett and CHD2 Productions. And the guys that are running CHD2 Productions have released the official citizen hearing package. And so it's out there. It's available. And, you know, it's all Steve still owns a third of that company, and everybody's working together.
Okay. Because I had someone on a while back that was saying that they did the video as well. That's why I'm a little bit confused about that part of it.
Well, you know, on a big production, there's a lot of people that do a lot of things. Just to set the record straight, my company was the sole provider of video services to the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure. We shot every foot of footage. We provided all of the edited pieces to CHD2 Productions. And, you know, I'm not going to really get too far into it, but, you know, I have heard that, and I think that maybe there's some people out there taking credit for things they didn't do, and they shouldn't do it. But beyond that, I'm not going to comment.
All right, sure. So speaking of that, okay, you put out these 6,500 DVDs that you burned, which is amazing. I can't imagine how long that took. You sent them out.
It was a job.
Yeah. Now, I had Steve on shortly after that, and I asked him what the reaction was, and he said, so far, nothing. Do you know if anything's changed as far as the reaction of those DVDs going out?
Sure. You know, it's very interesting because there's some very interesting correlations between some things that have happened and some dates and some announcements made by PRG. So, you know, one of the things that was very interesting is that at the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure, you know, John Burroughs was giving his testimony about the fact that he couldn't get his medical records. And since then, the government has come to him and settled and made an agreement with him that he can live with. And there's some admissions on the government's part inside of these documents. And we feel that a large part of that was helped to be brought about by the fact that the ex-Congress people that heard testimony at the citizen hearing were instrumental in writing a letter to Congress and to the powers that be in government, asking that they make these medical records available. So that was one quantifiable action that we saw as a result of the hearings. And then in Washington, we've had a publicist working to get us, more and more information, to get the information out there. So when we announced that the DVDs were going to Congress, just within a couple days of that announced date, Bill Clinton went on Jimmy Kimmel and did his famous conversation. And then there was another announcement by PRG about the Hillary Clinton and the Rockefeller Initiative. And shortly before that information was going to hit Capitol Hill, Obama went on Jimmy Kimmel and talked about the ET issue. And although they didn't give us much, they gave us certainly food for fodder. And, we think that those events are interconnected. And certainly when Podesta made his announcement that his biggest disappointment of 8 years in the White House was that he was unable to get the UFO files declassified, he actually, in his tweet where he made that comment, he used hashtag disclosure. And the hashtag disclosure is the hashtag that we created for the Congressional Hearing Initiative. And for the people who are paying attention to these actions, that was almost a signal to people that are involved heavily in the disclosure movement that we're on the right track. It was an acknowledgement in an unofficial way. And so those things happened. And then the biggest magazine that Congress reads is called Roll Call. It's like the trade magazine for congressmen and senators. And they gave us a huge write-up explaining the whole thing from the very beginning, before the citizen hearing, all the way through the disclosure movement. And it was very well received. And since then, believe it or not, Steve has been getting meetings with congressional staffers, giving them another copy of the citizen hearing on disclosure, and laying out for them why Congress should be having hearings. So when you consider the fact that the lobbyist movement is trying to do this through the political process that exists now, with all of the need for secrecy that this issue has been wrapped in for decades, it's good to see that, yes, there is some movement happening, and actually a lot more than a lot of people thought.
It'll be interesting. I always hear from different people. Last week, we actually had Ben Hansen on the show. He's the one that went through both the Jimmy Kimmel films of both the president and past president and studied them and gave an analysis. Interesting. That whole thing was interesting. When I spoke to Leslie Kane right after the Podesta tweet, and she was under the impression, she knows him pretty well, they keep in touch, but she never asked him directly about that tweet, but she said that's just his sense of humor. So I think that was partially speculating on her side.
Leslie's on the record as not really believing in the work of PRG, and so different people are going to have different opinions, and that's okay. But I know that, when Ben analyzed the footage, he was pretty convinced that they know more than they're telling. And I think that just going on there and giving us what we call a limited hangout, where you're just going to acknowledge something, but you're not going to acknowledge everything. We know that Bill Clinton at the Jimmy Kimmel show said what he said, and basically was saying that it wasn't until the second term that they really had an interest in the ET issue. But we know for a fact that that's not true, because the Rockefeller Initiative with Lawrence Rockefeller started during the first term. And there's, obviously a very famous paper trail and the pictures of Clinton with Hillary Clinton with Paul Davies' book in her bag on the Rockefeller estate during the first administration, the first years. That's all, you know, in the record. So when you say, well, we didn't pay attention to it until the second term when I started to have Roswell investigated, well, we know that's not true. So he went on Jimmy Kimmel, and for people that are in the know, he gave us basically a lie. And so, you know, when somebody lies like that, and it's very easy to point out, then, yeah, there's going to be people that don't really pay attention. There's going to be people that know what's going on that are going to say, wait a minute. You know, that's tantamount to an admission, almost. It's like when the Air Force says that Roswell was crash dummies, or no, it was the weather balloon, or no, it was this and that. When the lie becomes so ludicrous, it's almost like an admission in itself.
Right. I know there was some controversy about that book, but I checked that out too, and I'm trying to remember. I was trying to find it really quick, which book that was that supposedly she was carrying. Do you remember what that book was?
There was a book by Paul Davies, and I don't remember the exact title, but it was something like The Societal Implications of ET Contact.
Okay. We're having a little bit of a signal issue there. Is your signal – would you mind checking your phone, just seeing if you have a good signal on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
It says it's good. Let me –
All right.
How about now? Does it sound better?
Yeah, right now it does, yeah. So – okay. Yeah, I have the page up where all the photos are compared and everything, but I'll be darned if I can't find the book name. It's not on that. It doesn't look like it's even on that page. John Gibbons? Nope, that was a science advisor.
No, it's Paul Davies.
Paul Davies. Okay.
If you Google Paul Davies, you'll find the book.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an interesting thing. It seemed to me that someone was trying to say that was hoaxed or something, or photoshopped in there or something. I don't know. Had you ever heard anything about that?
No, I suppose that anything could be photoshopped, but you have to remember that these were pictures. Certainly, we can't say that there was no Photoshop, but they're older pictures. And nobody's ever been able to show an original that doesn't have that image.
Okay. There's a person on the message board that wants to know what your Sedona media site is, please, website is. Are there any videos out there where people can buy and where can you get them?
Yeah, you can go to eyeballtv.com and my DVDs are in the store. And then also the catalog is available on pay-per-view. So you can buy a password and watch it, you know, anytime, anywhere. All of the films are available, and we actually have an ET collection that has some really great films from Suzanne Taylor, Jose Escamilla, myself, and you can watch all of them for $9.99. So, you know, there's some different options, and inside the store of Evolve TV, you can buy the DVDs.
Okay, good. So did you have, going way back here, did you have an interest in, you know, UFOs and other paranormal activities early on in life? Or is this something that came about later?
You know, I always had a passing interest in it, but I'd never realized that it was going to be as big a part of my life as it is now. You know, I try to approach all of this from a journalistic standpoint. And so people say, well, what kind of experiences have you had that led you here? And, you know, truthfully, I've never seen a UFO. I've never been abducted by an alien. I've had some strange things happen in a haunted house. But at the end of the day, I think that exploring mysteries is the adventure of life. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that are out there that we can see and touch and feel. And there's a lot of things that are out there that we just know. And bringing those to the forefront and trying to solidify their presence in a more scientifically validated manner is really exciting.
I'm there with you 100%. You know, I did have a sighting. I had a passing interest as well, you know, but always had an interest in astronomy and science and things like that. And once I had a sighting in 2006, you know, I started paying a lot more attention. And I don't know. I guess it's time I can tell this. I told this toward the beginning of the show when I started. But how I got into doing a podcast is kind of on the UFO topic is kind of funny. If any listener hasn't heard it out there, I'll just tell it real quickly. And years ago, I was doing a little bit of stand-up comedy, you know, nothing, you know, just amateur. But I had a podcast for a while on interviewing some actually pretty good comedians. And another podcast contacted me, said they wanted to be on, you know, asked me on their show. And so I went on their show. And they asked me in the middle of the show, what was the strangest thing that ever happened? And I talked about my sighting. And the entire time, the person that was running the podcast named Skip something was teasing me the whole entire time and laughing and, you know, talking about the anal probe and, you know, all this stuff. And I had, oh, brother, you know, I had to listen to that. So I said, well, that's the last time I talk about that, you know, type of thing. Well, he was having like Google Analytics, and he was saying this podcast is being played a lot, and he had his podcast transcribed. And then he emailed me and says, guess what? It's when we were talking about UFOs. So like 2 weeks later, I said, you know what? I was doing a podcast on fine art and antiques, and it's a little dry. I'm really into the topic, but it's kind of dry. But this is exciting to me. And I just decided one day, I checked out different URLs, and I said, what's the easiest URL for someone looking for a podcast on UFOs? And podcast UFO it was. And
there you go.
And so I started, and I contacted a bunch of people, Stanton Friedman and all kinds of people like that. And all of a sudden, one guy answered me, and that was Steve Bassett. So he was the first person on my show.
And yeah, that's pretty funny. I've been working with Steve for on and off for a long time. And it seems that there's a lot of people that are part of my life now that I met through Steve. And it's very interesting. People that have nothing to do with the UFO field even. So he's been an influence. And, you know, I've just been able to help him out with this stuff. And a lot of people, I catch a certain amount of flack because people say there's no way there's ever going to be disclosure. There's no way that the president is ever going to stand at a podium and say, oh, we've been lying to you for 50 years, and yes, there's aliens, and here's one right here. And, you know, maybe that's true. But the political process moving for disclosure is just another part of the push for truth. So if we didn't have somebody in Washington doing this work, then there'd be a big void in the movement. And so I always say to people that regardless of whether you think this is going to end in the kind of disclosure that Steve says it's going to end in, it doesn't really matter. It's extremely vital that somebody be doing this work because it's part of the process. The ship of change is a huge ocean liner, and it turns very slowly. And we've got the media providing some element of disclosure, some say. We've got declassified documents that are providing it, and the day that the government comes out and says, yes, okay, it's all been a lie, may or may not come. But it's just another side of this that we have to keep pushing. We have to keep knocking on the door. We have to keep engaging the political process, no matter what it turns out to be. It's part of the movement. And so for all the people that come to me and say, you know, that's never going to happen the way Bassett thinks it is, I just have to say, it's like, it doesn't matter. It has to be done. Somebody has to be doing this. If we didn't have somebody in Washington trying to rail against Monsanto, are we ever going to put them out of business? Are we ever going to stop GMOs? Probably not. But without that pressure, they would be running completely rampant on us. If we didn't have groups out there making these lobbyist movements and engaging the political process through political means, then, you know, who knows how bad the lies would get. And who knows how much disclosure we'd be getting through other sources. So, you know, I think it's really important work.
Yeah, I'm on the side where I kind of agree with, you know, the side that says the government would, you know, never, you know, disclose. And it's mostly because what could they possibly say about lying to us if that is the case? You know, how they'd have a lot of answers to answer, but I do have to say that I agree with you, and I have said it before, that it's better than doing nothing. And it will, like you just said about Monsanto, which, yeah, I'd love to see something happen with that. But it's just like if no one does anything, as far as politics go, then things could run rampant as far as the lies, the future lies, or the cover-ups. You know, this would make them at least a little more guarded if such a thing is actually happening, in my opinion.
Well, it's true. And, you know, who knows what Podesta really meant with hashtag disclosure, but to us, we feel like it was a direct nod. And, I don't think that somebody worked that hard in the administration, despite what Leslie Keene says. Somebody that worked that hard in the administration to get that information released is going to make a big joke out of it when he has the nerve to make this tweet. I mean, it's like to go on the record saying that and then to put something like hashtag disclosure in there and then have somebody like Keen just write it off as a big joke because he's got a funny sense of humor doesn't make any sense to me. So there's a lot of, there's a lot of things that have happened, the article and roll call and these other things. They all go into the official record. And you might have somebody standing on a corner screaming that they're a contactee or whatever, but none of that's going into the political record. The citizen hearing on disclosure was a documented event, a part of history, and the congressional hearing initiatives has been documented by Congress. The CDs, the DVDs that arrived in Washington were received. There's a record of all of this. And so somewhere in the future, when all of the people that have something to lose by being caught for being a part of a lie are dead, there's this record of this effort. And, we don't know where it's going to go or where it's going to end up. But at the end of the day, it lives in history.
Yep. I agree. And I think, who knows how, if there ever is disclosure, how it's ever really going to come about. You know, I mean, everyone says not everyone, but a lot of people speculate that, you know, what would it take for the government, if it has been hiding the UFO topic, what would it take for them to actually break down and say, okay, we acknowledge this? I mean, it would have to be some type of massive contact or even beyond a sighting. It would have to be more than that, I believe. That may happen sooner or later. I mean, now there's more acknowledgement about the possibility of life out there. It's kind of like we're almost being eased into the mm-hmm. reality of this being so.
Well, you know, that's certainly part of the process of disclosure is that, the information is out there. Sure, it's buried in disinformation, and you have to kind of pick the bones of the legends and lore to look for the things that resonate to you as possibly being true. But and you have to do your own research. But at the end of the day, the information's out there. And the people that have been guarding this information, they know they can't keep it a secret forever. But, you know, there's also this idea of people seem to think like we're somehow qualified to become part of the galactic family. And I think that if I ventured my opinion about it, I don't think that humanity is ready to be welcomed into a federation of space brothers. I think that we have a long way to go. And I think that until we develop as a species beyond the threat of self-destruction and beyond the threat of, you know, a world with ISIS does not belong off this planet. And so, you know, I see a lot of people in L.A., you know, they're all like, oh, I'm enlightened. I go to yoga. I'm spiritual. I love everybody. It's like, great. More power to you. But until we spread that level of human advancement all the way through the farthest corners of the globe so that we are not walking around constantly doing self-destructive and dysfunctional behavior, we're not ready. And so I don't think that we're going to be, you know, maybe there's some forces helping us and hindering us from unseen places, but the flying saucer is not going to land in Central Park and welcome us to space until we've proven that we can do it.
Right, right. Have you, in your research for any of your videos or anything like that, have you considered, it seems to me that when the UFO topic comes up, people consider different thoughts of what they may be, not just extraterrestrial. Have you ever thought about or talked to anybody that made sense to you about any other possibilities of what they possibly could be?
Sure. I mean, you know, that's I had a very interesting talk with Richard Dolan about that. And also I don't know if you know who Chris O'Brien is, but Chris and I have made several films together, and he's one of my best friends. You know, he's of the idea that there's an underground civilization, and, you know, there's always the interdimensional possibility. And truthfully, when you get right down to it, if you are traversing the great distance of space and you're using some sort of a wormhole, that would almost make you an interdimensional traveler just as much as it made you an extraterrestrial traveler. So the idea that there are entities coming from places that are not necessarily other planets, that makes perfect sense. And there's probably that as well. So I think that maybe there's a lot of different civilizations and a lot of different types of entities that are all around us all the time that we don't see and that we don't know about. And I think all of those things are possible.
Well, you know, sometimes, you know, I mean, last week I ended up telling a ghost story and I never thought I would do that. You know, something that I experienced, and that was in the second hour of the program. And I'm surprised I didn't get a lot of email people saying, "What do you? It's a UFO show, for crying out loud." But sometimes though, it makes you wonder if you know, these things are connections through something that we just, you know, we can't see, we can't actually touch and feel, but somehow there's a connection through other ways. You know, maybe that's the explanation of what people call ghosts, and I don't know. And sometimes they are interrelated. I mean, you hear about, say, maybe hot spots with sightings, and people see Bigfoot and ghosts and everything else in the same area. I mean, it's really kind of amazing when you hear about these places that experience all that.
And you know, I've been. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, no. I was going to ask you also, have you ever, like, checked into anything like that for one of your videos, like one of these hot spots where all these different things seem to be happening?
Oh, absolutely. I've been twice in the Mysterious Valley, San Luis Valley, you know, where Chris writes his book.
Oh, yeah.
Books about. Him and I did the documentary on it. It surrounded Snippy the Horse, but it was really all about the valley itself. And then, so we did that film. And then I did Mysterious Creatures of the Southwest with David Hatcher Childress, Chris and I, and a big part of that was our journey to Dulce, where we were taken out on the reservation and shown some places that were supposedly heavily trafficked by Bigfoot, and interviewed some witnesses, and really they rolled out the red carpet for us in a way that you don't really see the Native Americans in that region do normally. So it was very interesting.
Wow. Getting back earlier, we were talking about the book that supposedly Hillary Clinton has in her bag as she's walking on the Rockefeller estate. And I found the title. It's called Are We Alone? There's no question mark there. And that is by Paul Davies. So that's the name of the book.
Yeah, and I think the subtitle is something like The Societal Impact of Extraterrestrial Contact or something like that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that little mystery has been.
Well, see, here's the thing. So we know that was happening during the first administration, and it's not like it's a big secret, right? Everybody knows it that has bothered to do any research. The documentation is in 100 places on the Internet. So when Bill Clinton just bold-faced says, well, around the second term, I decided to look into it, you're literally acknowledging to those people who know that you're not telling the truth. And so, you know, you really have to kind of look at that. That's why Ben Hansen's work was so valuable on these two interviews, because he was able to use an educated process to read between the lines and tell us what was really being said. You know, certainly, and he prefaces it that, you know, it's just his opinion, but it's based on some pretty good foundations. Then that's exactly what happened. These guys, on the surface, they gave us a limited response that, you know, there was canned laughter and everything else. But for the people that are really paying attention, they got a big nugget from both of these interviews. And so that's kind of how it works, and that's how disclosure is working, and that's why hashtag disclosure in Podesta's tweet was such a big deal. And so, you know, the people that are in the position, they can't just come out and disclose, but they can leave these little clues, and people can say, well, that wasn't a clue. But if you know what to listen for and you know the facts, then you know. They're telling the people who know what to listen for what they need to hear.
Now, I wonder, Podesta, if anyone actually, I'm sure it happened that maybe even his colleagues or someone said, hey, what's up with that, you know, type of thing. It'd be interesting to know, you know, if anyone has actually talked to him about this. And I don't think that anybody has been, you know, releasing what he said one-on-one about it. Have you heard anything out there?
No, you know, it's interesting. There's very little. And I think that, you know, it has to do with, again, this is the way this process works. You know, you've got all these people clamoring for disclosure. You've got a government that is, you know, probably divided on how much we should be told. Well, the evidence is piled up, and you've got to do something. So you take a mid-level guy, and you get him to start making some noise about it, and it gives you the illusion that you're doing something or that you're trying to do something or that you're on the side of the people that want to know. And again, it gives the people that want to know a little bit to hold on to and a little bit to look forward to and a little bit of acknowledgement, and it kind of satisfies everybody. Not to the point of disclosure, but, and then, you know, you go a little bit further with hanging out some of these phrases and some of these mistruths and some of these other, actions that mean more to some than others. And so, you know, it's a very clever way of playing the game while still maintaining the official veil of secrecy.
Right, right. So we're on right now with Ron James, and if someone would like to call in, every once in a while, Ron, someone will call in. And so if you'd like to call in, the number is 603-967-4030. And if you're listening live, you can jump over to podcastufo.com. And right on the home page there, you'll see the chat room. You can jump in and ask our guest a question. So what we do, Ron, I neglected to tell you, but in about 8 minutes or so, we take just a quick little music break. And you're not to go anywhere. It's just so I can separate the two parts of the show. And so at the top of the hour, I will let you know that. But continuing on, you're in, you live right near Steve Bassett, don't you, out there in California?
Actually, Steve's in Washington right now doing the Congressional Hearing Initiative. So, but yeah, when he's in California, we're both in the South Bay area, LA, Hollywood.
Yeah.
And in the beach cities.
Now, it seemed to me like it wasn't too long ago there was a sighting in Southern California. Do you stay up on that, what's going on regionally?
Well, you know, there's so many sightings in all these different places. And, you know, I'm not the one that grabs my video camera and goes running every time there's reports of a sighting. So, you know, we've got this weird anomaly underwater that has been found off of the coast of Malibu. And then we've got, you know, my window looks right out over the Catalina area. So there's always strange things happening in the sky, but whether or not it's things that can't be explained, you know, I don't know. But yeah, there's sightings everywhere, and they're starting to increase. And so, like this weekend, I went and took a look at this thing this guy does named Robert Bingham. He calls himself the UFO summoner, and he says that he can go anywhere and meditate, and strange anomalies will appear in the sky. And so he's actually built up quite a reputation, and so I went to see for myself this weekend, and that was kind of interesting.
And did you see anything? Any UFOs?
You know, I did not see any UFOs on that day. I saw a lot of Mylar balloons. However, I will say that some of the videos that he's gotten are intriguing, but a lot of them are obviously something that can be explained logically. But, you know, it only takes those few that you can't explain, kind of like Project Blue Book. So who knows what's going on with that? But there's definitely things happening in the sky that we can't explain, even beyond the UFO thing. You know, there's the idea that maybe there's life forms that we haven't discovered that live in the atmosphere, like rods, you know, that have been caught on cameras, high-speed cameras. And so who knows what he's really seeing some of the times when things look like unexplainable objects. But there's enough there to warrant further investigation.
Well, I remember there was a little bit of a battle going on between, I want to say, Jimmy Church and Lee Spiegel about that Malibu geological thing off the coast of Malibu. And I think that there was some research done on that by someone from the U.S. Geological Survey that is just a rock formation or something. Have you looked into that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard both sides of the story. At the end of the day, until somebody goes down there and photographs it, we don't know. It's quite possible that it's just an anomaly with the Google Earth satellite mapping. But rock formations, if you go to Peru and you look at a rock formation, or the jungles of Guatemala, and you look at a rock formation, it doesn't mean it's not something. In fact, a lot of times it's a pyramid that's been covered up. So until the mystery is completely addressed in a way that nobody can debate it anymore, it's going to be a topic of discussion. But there's definitely a lot of weird underwater things happening in this area off the coast.
Early on I asked you about what type of reaction that was you got out of when you sent all those DVDs out to, you know, members of Congress. But someone in the message board wants to know, has anyone actually acknowledged that they received them and watched them? Do you happen to know that?
Now we don't know how many people have watched them, but we know that we've had some meetings. The major committees in Washington are the ones that we've targeted for meetings, because if we can get the thing into a committee where they're discussing it, then they have to talk openly about the possibilities of holding hearings, and then they have to explain, if they choose not to do it, why they wouldn't. So, yeah, we do know. What we know for a fact is that the DVDs or parts of the DVDs have been viewed by several staffers in several offices. We don't know how many Congress people have actually taken the time to watch them, but we do know that they're making the rounds. And yes, the receipt of them has been acknowledged, and meetings are happening. You know, that's the most exciting thing, is that, you knock on these doors enough, they're going to talk to you. Even if it's a low-level staffer that they just sent you, they let you into the office and they sit down long enough to hear what you have to say, it's still something. And so, that's a big deal. So, yeah, they've been acknowledged, there's a certain amount of attention. And the attention's not ending because of the Rockefeller Initiative and Hillary Clinton's presidential bid. The ongoing strategy right now is to bring this into the limelight and make it a question that she has to answer as part of the campaign. And we think that there's just enough opposition to her candidacy that somebody's going to bring it up.
They'll probably bring up the email first. the hidden email. You keep hearing about that.
Yeah. Well, what would be fun is if the hidden email was in reference to the Rockefeller Initiative. There you go.
Ah.
Or maybe the email to Podesta saying, this is why we can't disclose. You never know. But at the end of the day, it's another potential issue for somebody who needs some potential issues regarding the Clintons to bring into the mix. And so maybe they will.
Right. That would be what you call a twofer, if we get that.
Yeah, and I know for a fact that, that's kind of the strategy right now, reaching out to the Republican opposition and saying, by the way, did you know about this? And, I know for a fact that that's being done.
Yeah. So you were there at the entire time, obviously, filming during the citizen hearing. What do you think, I know that some of the people that spoke sort of went a little bit fringy. I mean, I was kind of involved in checking out what was going on at the time and all that, and got a lot of feedback from people that were there, live and, every other day or whatever, I'd hear from someone. But when you heard those people speak and then you heard the retired congressional people interact, did you see anyone in particular that you would say, now that person really is taking this seriously?
It's interesting because there wasn't a single one that didn't. That's some interviews that I shot that I haven't released yet, where I actually stood and spoke to every one of them and asked them these questions. And, every one of them walked into this thing either A, not thinking much about the topic, or B, not knowing what to expect. And they left saying, we really have to get to the bottom of this. And so, that's a credit to how professionally the event was put on. It looked and felt and was, constructed just like a real hearing. And yes, I'll be the first to admit there was a couple of people that just went completely derailed, especially in closing statements. And, we don't need to mention any names, but, there was some things that probably shouldn't have been said in the way they were said. But overall, you kind of have to look at the big picture, and it was very professional, very.
Oops, we lost Ron James there. So anyway, that's right at the top of the hour. And thank you for listening to the show. If you'd like to support us and listen to hour two of every show, only cost you a dollar or more. It's up to you, a month. And you can find that information right on our website, podcastufo.com. It's a real easy subscribe. And I want to thank everyone for helping out with the show today. Alejandro Rojas with the news. I want to thank Peggy Shunning for managing our Facebook page. Remember to like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. Next week, we have Peter Davenport on. And remember to keep your eyes to the sky, and we'll see you next week.